This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. President Obama is expected to speak in the next few minutes, and we're going to carry his comments live. It is expected that the president is going to address the Affordable Care Act and an effort to correct a broken promise. The president repeatedly said that if Americans wanted to keep their health care plans, their health insurance plans, they could do so under Obamacare. That proved to be untrue for millions of Americans. And what we're expecting in the next few minutes is for President Obama to say how he proposes to fix that. We've got a couple of NPR correspondents who've been covering this story for a long time in our studios here. NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
And NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rodner. Julie, good morning to you.
Nice to be here.
Okay, before we get to the details of what the president is going to propose or say that he's going to do, Scott Horsley, why did he need to do it?
Well, he needed to do it because there's been enormous frustration from people who are in the individual insurance market who've been getting notices from their insurance carriers that their policies are going to be canceled. And at the same time, this balky government website hasn't made it easy for them to shop around for an alternative. Mm-hmm. The White House is convinced that those alternatives do exist, that many people whose policies are being canceled in the individual market will actually find better coverage on the insurance exchanges.
But they haven't been able to prove that to anybody.
Yeah, it's a tough argument to make when it's difficult to log onto the website. And that's created a lot of friction with the president's fellow Democrats on the Hill. And most urgently, tomorrow, the House is going to vote on a bill by a Republican congressman, Fred Upton, that would allow all the insurance companies not only to extend those policies, but to start marketing them to new customers. And that would really undermine the risk pool in the insurance exchanges. So the president's under some pressure to head that off.
The risk pool, because different kinds of plans, they would have fewer and fewer people in them if there was a wider variety of plans. Is that correct?
Well, that's right. The policies that are on the individual market that are out there now are sort of stripped down plans. They don't have all the protections of the plans under Obamacare. That means they're potentially cheaper, and they might be attractive, especially to healthy people. Those are the only people who could get coverage on the old dysfunctional individual market. So if you carve out all those healthy people, then the only people left in the Obamacare plans are the sicker, more expensive people, and the fragile economics start to break down.
Okay, so you have a practical problem. You, however, have a political disaster for the White House here with the president's approval ratings. Is it fair to say as low as they've ever been in his presidency?
They are, and of course, when his approval ratings tank, that means a lot less stick-to-him loyalty from his fellow Democrats on the Hill. They can read those poll numbers, too, and a lot of them are worried about 2014.
Okay, so
he doesn't have to run for re-election. They do.
They do, and he would like to get something through Congress, which requires Democrats in Congress. Julie Rovner, so what is the president's proposed fix, as best you know at this point?
Well, what's been widely reported is this will be an administrative to fix something that does not need legislation, which, of course, is a little bit problematic, actually, for those on Capitol Hill, because remember, in the House, the Democrats are going to have to vote. So we hear that the Democrats may come up with something of their own so that they'll have something to vote on. But what the president apparently is going to propose is to let people keep their existing plans for one more year. Now, it's important to say that people actually can keep their non-compliant plans really into next year if they renew them this year. So a lot of these cancellation notices that have been going out from these insurance companies mm-hmm. are not actually required by the law. What the law says is that those insurance companies can sell those plans, these non-compliant plans, really until December 31st of this year, and they can run all the way through 2014. But that's not what a lot of the insurance companies are doing. They're actually blaming it on the law, saying that, you know, we have to stop selling these plans. Now, apparently, what the administration wants to do is say you can actually sell those plans all the way through 2014 into 2015. So basically, they're going to give an extra year for those non-compliant plans.
So just so I understand, the insurance companies have said we're canceling your plan and it's because of Obamacare. And now the Obama administration is changing the rules somewhat to put it back on the insurance companies and say, if you guys want to sell these plans, go ahead.
That's exactly right.
Will they also give some indication to insurance customers of what the options are for them?
That's right. And one of the requirements, well, at least what we're hearing, is that they're going to say that if these insurance companies want to continue to sell these plans that don't comply with the new rules under the Affordable Care Act, they will have to tell people what things that are not covered that would be covered if they were compliant with the law, and also that they might be able to get a better deal on the exchange. So for some people who might be able to get tax credits or or perhaps qualify for Medicaid, they will have to tell their policyholders that they, if they went to the exchange, they might be able to do that. That will be the rules if they're going to sell these non-compliant plans in 2014.
I just want to mention for people, we are standing by for President Obama. We expect to hear from him momentarily. He's expected to step up to the lectern, the podium in the White House briefing room and say precisely what his plan is. But while we're waiting, Julie Robner, we're hearing that the administration would give people another year, give insurance companies another year to sell these plans that the Obamacare would otherwise disallow. Didn't you report on our air the other day that this would be difficult, if not impossible, to actually do?
I did indeed, and this is going to be one of the things that I'm sure the insurance industry is going to be very unhappy about. It's taken a long time for them to create new plans that are compliant with the law, to take these old plans and basically take them off the book, to notify these policyholders. They have to remember insurance is regulated at the state level. They have to go to insurance regulators, get these new plans approved, get rates approved, notify the policyholders. It's already the middle of November. If these plans are ending at the end of December, that's a very short time. So it would be really difficult to turn around. And as you know, one of my sources said to me, just say never mind. So, you know, basically, I think what the administration is trying to do is, as you say, just kind of deflect it all back onto the insurance companies. So, you know, here are all these policyholders with these letters that say your insurance is being canceled. Now, whether it was because of the law, whether it was because the insurance companies just decided to make a business decision, it's going to be, it may be that those people are still going to have canceled policies. They just won't know who to blame.
Scott Horsley, let's come back to the political damage here. How seriously damaged has the president been by this controversy over this promise that was broken?
Well, this is tough both for his signature achievement, Obamacare, which has never been tremendously popular with the public and is less popular now than at its best moment. But it's also damaging to the central argument of the Obama administration, which is that government can be a force for good. It's tough to make that case when you can't get your insurance marketplace website to work. The government needs to show competence if it's going to win the trust of the American people, and that trust has been badly damaged by this episode.
Let's remember, guys, where do things stand with the website, which the administration has promised will be up and working by the end of the month? You're both smiling as I say this.
It is getting better. The administration has been telling us it's getting better week by week, and actually, in our own test, we've noticed some improvement in the website. I've talked to people, navigators out in the field who've been working to sign people up.
Those are the navigators. You better define that.
Navigators are people who work with would-be insurance customers to help them navigate the site, which has turned out to be more of an obstacle course than was intended, of course.
Yeah.
But what they say is that people who stick with it are getting through. Of course, yesterday we got the numbers from the administration that showed only 27,000 people had managed to complete the process on the federal website.
Right.
Another 70-some thousand through the state websites. So a fraction of the people who the administration had thought could make it through at this point. And again, that's why these canceled insurance policies are a much bigger irritant than they otherwise would have been. If you get a cancellation notice and you can't get on the website to shop around and see what your options are, you're that much more frustrated and taking it out on the White House.
Robner.
But one vote of confidence for how the website is doing is that they are starting to invite back some of the people who got stuck in the early days but who did give email addresses. That's one of the things you actually have to do when you sign up. They are writing back to those people and saying, if you got stuck, please come back because the website is now better and you'll stand a better chance of completing the process. I think they're not quite promising yet that it's all fixed, but they're
your
asking people.
Your odds are a little better,
yeah,
maybe.
I think it's maybe more than that, but they're asking people who got stuck in the really early part of the process to come back now. And they said they're sending out 275,000 emails this week asking those people to come back. Not all at once. I don't think they think they can handle 275,000 people at once, but they said they're sending them in waves, and then starting next week they'll send out, you know, another flood of emails to people who got stuck asking them to come back.
Again, part of the challenge with the troubles on the website is the people who are most persistent, the people who are most willing to endure the obstacles of signing up, are the ones who most desperately need health insurance, and they tend to be older and sicker and will be more costly to provide care for. The more casual customer, the one who hasn't had a coverage before, they're not as willing to go through that obstacle course. And so the harder it is to sign up, the less likely you are to get the really viable mix of both young, healthy, and older, sicker customers to make this thing work.
Let me just mention, you are listening to special coverage from NPR News. We are expecting to hear shortly from President Obama announcing his planned fix to a problem, a huge problem that has developed with the Affordable Care Act. Millions of people whose policies were canceled in a way that appears to have been quite predictable, but which the president promised would never happen, that people would be able to keep their plans if they liked them. Julie Rofner, you mentioned that, and Scott Horsley as well, that this might have an interesting dynamic in Congress, and that in fact this was driven in part by an impending vote in Congress on a Republican bill in the House of Representatives. So let's go to Capitol Hill to hear what some of the early reaction is there. NPR's Elsa Chang is on the line. Elsa, good morning.
Good morning.
So what are people saying? Obviously, the president hasn't spoken, but it's widely understood what he's going to say. What are people saying on Capitol Hill?
Well, I haven't had a chance. Speaker Boehner actually made some pretty harsh remarks just a few minutes ago. He basically said you simply cannot trust the White House, that promise after promise from this White House has turned out not to be true, and that, quote, there is simply no way to fix this. He also says that this fix is going to destroy the best health care delivery system in the world. So he's basically telegraphing that he absolutely does not think this proposed fix that's going to be proposed in minutes is going to do anything to solve the problems. He is staunchly in favor of Fred Upton's bill, which was mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. which would basically allow any plan that's available in the marketplace now to continue. But House Democrats, you know, whom I've been speaking to the last couple of days, they have been extremely uncomfortable with the situation. You know, 22 House Democrats last summer had voted to delay the individual mandate, and it's perceived that if this fix had not been announced by the administration, that tomorrow's vote may not only garner those 22 House Democratic votes, but actually quite a few more. A lot of them are saying that they are facing a lot of heat from their constituents, not only about the botched rollout of the healthcare website, but about the broken promise, a perceived broken promise that that many people wouldn't be able to keep their health plan.
You can begin to see the political danger for the administration here, can't you? Because this has been such an intensely partisan issue. Republicans have often looked bad because Republicans are the only ones who seem to be firmly against it. Democrats have been divided at times, united at times in favor of the bill, but you have a situation in favor of the law, I should say, but you have a situation where you might have bipartisan opposition to the White House. That's the danger here, isn't it?
Absolutely. And tomorrow's vote on the House bill, again, the Fred Upton bill, was in many ways shaping up to be this key test vote, to test not only, you know, how successful this healthcare law would be, but more specifically, how unified would Democrats be in supporting this healthcare law that has had this very embarrassing rollout? And a number of the House Democrats I talked to said that the key factor that would be decisive in swinging their vote towards voting for the bill was whether the Obama administration was going to announce a fix today. So Democrats are facing some heat. You know, a group of them that are considered in vulnerable districts have called for things as, you know, as far as delaying the enrollment period or extending the enrollment period. Mary Landrieu on the Senate side of Louisiana, she has her own competing bill here on the Senate side that a number of Democrats are supporting. Democrats that are staunchly in favor of the Affordable Care Act. Democrats like Dianne Feinstein of California, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, those were kind of surprising sort of allies because some of the other Democrats that have signed on to such things as extending the enrollment period were perceived to be slightly vulnerable Democrats in red states who maybe wanted to win some political points by being a little tougher on the rollout of the health care law. But seeing allies like Dianne Feinstein and Jeff Merkley of Oregon sign on to this bill by Mary Landrieu that would allow current health plans to continue through the next year, but not allow new people to sign up for those grandfather plans. That was a signal that Democrats want something to be done about the broken promise.
And I don't want to say ultimatum, but Democrats, it sounds like we're signaling you're going to lose us. You're going to lose us on this vote if you don't come up with a solution of your own. That's what the word
Absolutely.
Was to the White House.
Absolutely. That was the deciding factor. Ron Barber of Arizona, he said that explicitly to me last night. He said basically what he is waiting for is a fix to be announced by the White House. If a fix is not announced by the White House about this issue of canceled plans, he would be favorably inclined to vote for the bill.
Scott Horsley, how different different is this than the situation for the Democratic Party just a few weeks ago when they seemed so united?
That's right. I mean, it was actually a sort of rare moment of unity for the Democrats early on in October when they were rallying behind the president and taking a very tough stand against the government shutdown and insisting they would give no ground in order to get the government reopened and get the debt ceiling extended. What a difference a month makes. It's a very different picture we're seeing now. And you know, going back to what Elsa was saying about all these different fixes that are on the table, some of them are genuine attempts to fix the Obamacare. Some of them are really attempts to peel off so many people that Obamacare collapses of its own weight. But all the fixes whittle away at the number of people who are in that insurance exchange. Some of them whittle away a little bit, some of them whittle away a lot. But if, for example, you extend the enrollment period, young people will have extra months to stay uncovered. If you suspend or delay the individual mandate, the penalty for not signing up, you'll have fewer people in the pool. All of these little changes poke and prod and whittle away at the pool of people in the insurance pool. And, you know, this, what the president's going to propose today is a sort of a small whittle. What Fred Upton's plan would be a larger whittle. The plan can withstand some of this maybe, but you do too much, it does collapse of its own
weight. Well, let's turn to Julie Rovner. Are we in a situation where if there are very many more changes to this law, it actually could be in danger of collapsing?
Well, this is the big concern. Everybody says, you know, this is a very tightly woven piece of fabric, and you start pulling on one thread, and the whole thing at some point unravels. And, you know, it's just, can you take a little piece out of it for political reasons? As Scott was saying, you might be able to take a little piece, but boy, you start pulling on that thread too hard, and the whole thing really does start to unravel at some point. And of course, that's just what the Republicans want, but you know, they now have the Democrats in this very dicey political situation.
We are talking about several million people in the individual market, right?
That's right.
5% is what's been commonly
said?
Yeah,
the numbers, and interestingly, nobody actually has, one of the things about healthcare, nobody actually has a good number. It's somewhere between 12 and 15 million people.
12 and 15 million people. And some of them presumably are perfectly happy to change plans and go into the exchange if the website only worked, but there must be some number of people, perhaps in the millions, who would like to keep their current plans.
Well, interestingly about the individual market, there's sort of different kinds of people in the individual market. There's some people who have really crummy plans and don't know it because they've never had to use them. They have no idea that their plans are as bad as they are. In fact, some of the people in some of these cancellation stories, when reporters went back to them and actually went over their plans with them, were kind of shocked to discover how bad their plans were.
That if I'm sick, I'm going bankrupt.
That's
under this
right.
Plan, basically.
But if you've never been sick and you've never used your insurance, you have no idea that, you know, one woman's plan actually only covered $50 towards anything, including if she went to the hospital. But she didn't know because she'd never been sick.
Wow.
So yeah, those are the kind of plans that the law actually set out to ban, to say, really, this is not insurance. You may have only been paying $50 a month for this, but this is not insurance. Now, some people actually have plans that are close to meeting the requirements of the Affordable Care Act, but don't quite. And those people are kind of legitimately unhappy about having to change plans. And some people are kind of in between.
Scott Horsley, I want to ask about that, because this maybe is a good moment to remember that the president is in this mess, not precisely because of the law, but because of messaging, because of the way that he chose to describe the law. We had the Democratic pollster Anna Greenberg in here the other day, and she was mentioning that she thought that the administration could have hit a lot harder on the notion that they were going to go after the insurance companies and make people get better plans from their insurance companies, make the insurance companies offer better plans. That wasn't the messaging. Instead, the president made this statement, if you like your current plan, you can keep it, period, which turned out not to be true and not even the objective of the law.
Right. It was a blatantly political message designed to reassure Americans that this is not going to be a big disruptive plan, but you can't fix the problems with the American healthcare system without disrupting at least some parts of it. And the White House obviously erred in crafting that message as carelessly as they did. But some of this also speaks to what is the nature of insurance.
Which I want to talk about in just a moment, but I just need to do a very brief identification and break for people and just remind people that we are waiting on President Obama to speak. He was expected to speak about 11:45 Eastern Time. We're well past that, but it's coming up shortly, and we're going to stay with you until we hear from the president on special coverage from NPR News. And you are listening to live special coverage from NPR News. We're waiting on a statement at the White House from President Obama. If you're just joining us, I will mention that the president is expected to speak in the White House briefing room to an assembled group of reporters and to much of the nation to explain what he intends to do now that he has had to apologize for breaking a promise on Obamacare, the promise being that people could keep their insurance plans if they like them. Scott Horsley, our White House correspondent, is still with us, along with Elsa Chang on Capitol Hill and Julie Rovner, our health policy correspondent. And Scott Horsley, you were just saying that this strange situation the president has put himself in because of the way he chose to speak about the law reveals something about the insurance industry itself.
Well, what Julie was talking about, some of these individual plans that don't cover very much. For some people, that's really all they want. So, for example, one of the things that the plans and the exchanges are required to cover is maternity care. Now, an older couple that has no plans to have children or a single man might say, why should I pay for maternity care coverage if I'm never going to take advantage of it? But, of course, part of the nature of insurance is you pool that assortment of people, some of whom will get sick, some of whom will stay healthy, and you share those risks.
Some of whom will get pregnant and some of whom will not.
It is a form of socialized medicine, or at least socialized insurance. Insurance is, by its nature, a socialization of risk. And some people accept that and some don't like that idea.
But the president didn't choose to sell it that way.
No, that would be a tough sell in this country.
Julie Rovner, was there a way the president could have talked about this in a way that would have been more honest to what the law was supposed to be, that might actually have flown politically, or the people you talk to in Congress and elsewhere feel that there was nothing else he could have done?
Well, certainly, you know, one of the big ironies, of course, and it was former President Clinton who kind of lit the fire under this week by saying, really, the president should have kept his promise.
Yeah.
Where that promise came from was the mistake that President Clinton made when he was trying to sell his health plan in the early 1990s that really would have changed just about everybody's health insurance. And that went down because it was too much change for too many people. So when President Obama was designing his plan, it really is only changing the policies of people in the individual market. And that's where that sort of line grew out of, that you'll be able to keep your health plan, because he was mostly talking to people in the large group market, people who get their insurance from employers and people in Medicare and Medicaid. Those people are not having to change their health plans. And that's what that was really aimed at.
This whole thing was an effort to reassure people that for most people, your life is not supposed to change all that much.
That's right. Exactly. And that was true. The problem is the people in the individual market are having to change their plans. And I think President Obama, certainly the senior members of his staff, knew that. And I think by making that statement so blanket, that's where he went wrong. So it's a very small, you know, universe of people who are having to make changes. But that small universe, we have 300 million people in the U.S., small universe is still a couple million people.
That's the size of a state, the size of a country.
And the angry ones, the ones who are being disadvantaged, are the ones who are writing to their congressmen and senators. And so, you know, predictably, there's an uproar about it.
Let me just remind you that you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. We do have an advisory that the president will be out at the lectern in the next minute or so in the White House press room, and we'll go to his remarks live as soon as he begins. The president, of course, promised repeatedly during the debate over the Affordable Care Act and during the presidential campaign that followed that if you like your current plan, you can keep it. This turned out to be untrue for millions of people in the individual insurance market. And what we're expecting now is that the president will announce a fix, an administrative fix, we are hearing, to this. There will not be legislation, at least according to the administration's plan. The administration will allow insurance companies for one more year to continue to sell people plans that they may choose to keep, that they may like. At the same time, we're told, is this correct, Julie Rovner, that the administration is going to make people, make insurance companies explain what they're selling? And here's the president.
A few words about the tragedy that's unfolded in the Philippines. Now, over the past few days, I think all of us have been shaken by the images of the devastation wrought by Typhoon Haiyan. It's a heartbreaking reminder of how fragile life is, and among the dead are several Americans. So our prayers are with the Filipino people and with Filipino Americans across our country who are anxious about their family and friends back home. You know, one of our core principles is when friends are in trouble, America helps. As I told President Aquino earlier this week, the United States will continue to offer whatever assistance we can. Our military personnel and USAID team do this better than anybody in the world, and they've been already on the ground working tirelessly to deliver food, water, medicine, shelter, and to help with airlift. Today, the aircraft carrier USS George Washington and other ships arrived to help with search and rescue, as well as supplies, medical care, and logistical support. And more help is on the way. America's strength, of course, has always been more than just about what our government can do. It's also about what our citizens can do. It's about the big-heartedness of the American people when they see other folks in trouble. So today I would encourage everybody who wants to help to visit whitehouse.gov/typhoon. That's whitehouse.gov/typhoon. And that'll offer you links to organizations that are working on the ground in ways that you can support their efforts. Our friends in the Philippines will face a long, hard road ahead, but they'll continue to have a friend and partner in the United States of America. Now, switching gears, it has now been 6 weeks since the Affordable Care Act's new marketplaces opened for business. I think it's fair to say that the rollout has been rough so far, and I think everybody understands that I'm not happy about the fact that the rollout has been wrought with a whole range of problems that I've been deeply concerned about. But today I want to talk about what we know after these first few weeks and what we're doing to implement and improve the law. Yesterday, the White House announced that in the first month, more than 100,000 Americans successfully enrolled in new insurance plans. Is that as high a number as we'd like? Absolutely not. But it does mean that people want affordable health care. The problems of the website have prevented too many Americans from completing the enrollment process, and that's on us, not on them. But there's no question that there's real demand for quality, affordable health insurance. In the first month, nearly 1 million people successfully completed an application for themselves or their families. Those applications represent more than 1.5 million people. Of those 1.5 million people, 106,000 of them have successfully signed up to get covered. Another 396,000 have the ability to gain access to Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. That's been less reported on, but it shouldn't be. Americans who are having a difficult time, who are poor, many of them working, may have a disability. They're Americans like everybody else, and the fact that they are now able to get insurance is going to be critically important. Later today, I'll be in Ohio, where Governor Kasich, a Republican, has expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, and as many as 275,000 Ohioans will ultimately be better off because of it. And if every governor followed suit, another 5.4 million Americans could gain access to health care next year. So, bottom line is, in just 1 month, despite all the problems that we've seen with the website, more than 500,000 Americans.
Just a reminder, you're listening to special coverage from NPR News of a statement by President Obama.
First, many of them for the first time in their lives. And that's life-changing. And it's significant. That still leaves about 1 million Americans who successfully made it through the website, now qualified to buy insurance, but haven't picked a plan yet. And there's no question that if the website were working as it's supposed to, that number would be much higher of people who've actually enrolled. So that's problem number one, making sure that the website works the way it's supposed to. It's gotten a lot better over the last few weeks than it was on the first day, but we're working 24/7 to get it working for the vast majority of Americans in a smooth, consistent way. The other problem that has received a lot of attention concerns Americans who've received letters from their insurers that they may be losing the plans they bought in the old individual market, often because they no longer meet the law's requirements to cover basic benefits like prescription drugs or doctor's visits. Now, as I indicated earlier, I completely get how upsetting this can be for a lot of Americans, particularly after assurances they heard from me that if they had a plan that they liked, they could keep it. And to those Americans, I hear you loud and clear. I said that I would do everything we can to fix this problem, and today I'm offering an idea that will help do it. Already, people who have plans that predate the Affordable Care Act can keep those plans if they haven't changed. That was already in the law. That's what's called a grandfather clause. It was included in the law. Today, we're going to extend that principle both to people whose plans have changed since the law took effect, and to people who bought plans since the law took effect. So state insurance commissioners still have the power to decide what plans can and can't be sold in their states, but the bottom line is insurers can extend current plans that would otherwise be canceled into 2014, and Americans whose plans have been canceled can choose to re-enroll in the same kind of plan. We're also requiring insurers to extend current plans to inform their customers about two things. One, that protections, what protections these renewed plans don't include. Number two, that the marketplace offers new options with better coverage and tax credits that might help you bring down the cost. So, if you received one of these letters, I'd encourage you to take a look at the marketplace. Even if the website isn't working as smoothly as it should be for everybody yet, the plan comparison tool that lets you browse costs for new plans near you is working just fine. Now, this fix won't solve every problem for every person, but it's going to help a lot of people. Doing more will require work with Congress. And I've said from the beginning, I'm willing to work with Democrats and Republicans to fix problems as they arise. This is an example of what I was talking about. We can always make this law work better. It is important to understand, though, that the old individual market was not working well. And it's important that we don't pretend that somehow that's a place worth going back to. Too often it works fine as long as you stay healthy. It doesn't work well when you're sick. So year after year, Americans were routinely exposed to financial ruin or denied coverage due to minor pre-existing conditions or dropped from coverage altogether, even if they paid their premiums on time. That's one of the reasons we pursued this reform in the first place. And that's why I will not accept proposals that are just another brazen attempt to undermine or repeal the overall law and drag us back into a broken system. We will continue to make the case, even to folks who choose to keep their own plans, that they should shop around in the new marketplace, because there's a good chance that they'll be able to buy better insurance at lower cost. So, we're going to do everything we can to help the Americans who've received these cancellation notices. But I also want everybody to remember that there are still 40 million Americans who don't have health insurance at all. I'm not going to walk away from 40 million people who have the chance to get health insurance for the first time, and I'm not going to walk away from something that has helped the cost of health care grow at its slowest rate in 50 years. So we're at the opening weeks of the project to build a better health care system for everybody, a system that will offer real financial security and peace of mind to millions of Americans. It is a complex process. There are all kinds of challenges. I'm sure there will be additional challenges that come up. And it's important that we're honest and straightforward in terms when we come up with a problem with these reforms and these laws that we address them. But we've got to move forward on this. It took 100 years for us to even get to the point where we could start talking about and implementing a law to make sure everybody's got health insurance. And my pledge to the American people is that we're going to solve the problems that are there. We're going to get it right. And the Affordable Care Act is going to work for the American people. So with that, I'm going to take your questions, and I'm going to start with Julie Pace of AP.
The combination of the website problems and the concerns over the policy cancellations has sparked a lot of worry within your own party. And polls also show that you're taking some hits with the public on both your overall job approval rating and also on factors like trust and honesty. Do you feel as though the flawed healthcare rollout has led to a breach in the public trust and confidence in government? And if so, how do you plan to resolve that?
There is no doubt that people are frustrated. We just came out of a shutdown, and the possibility that for the first time in over 200 years we wouldn't pay our bills. And people breathed a sigh of relief when that finally got done, and the next thing they know is that the president's health care reform can't get the website to work, and that there are these other problems with respect to cancellation notices. And you know, I understand why folks are frustrated. I would be too, because sometimes, you know, people look at what's taking place in Washington and they say, not enough is getting done that helps me. with my life. And, you know, regardless of what Congress does, ultimately I'm the President of the United States, and they expect me to do something about it. So in terms of how I intend to approach it, I'm just going to keep on working as hard as I can around the priorities that the American people care about. And I think it's legitimate for them to expect me to have to win back some credibility on this health care law in particular and on a whole range of these issues in general. And, you know, that's on me. I mean, we fumbled the rollout on this health care law. There are a whole bunch of things about it that are working really well, which people didn't notice, right, because they weren't controversial. So making sure kids could stay on their parents' plans till they were up through the age of 25, and making sure that seniors got more discounts on their prescription drugs. There were a whole bunch of stuff that we did well over the first 3 years, but we always knew that these marketplaces, creating a place where people can shop and through competition get a better deal for the health insurance that their families need, we always knew that that was going to be complicated and everybody was going to be paying a lot of attention to it. And we should have done a better job getting that right on day one, not on day 28 or on day 40. I am confident that by the time we look back on this next year, that people are going to say, this is working well, and it's helping a lot of people. But my intention in terms of winning back the confidence of the American people is just to work as hard as I can, identify the problems that we've got, make sure that we're fixing them, whether it's a website, whether it is making sure that folks who got these cancellation notices get help. We're just going to keep on chipping away at this until the job is done. Major Garrett.
You're listening to live special coverage of President Obama on NPR News.
While the law was being debated, if you like your plan, you can keep it. You said after the law was implemented or signed, if you like your plan, you can keep it. Americans believed you, sir, when you said that to them over and over. Do you not believe, sir, the American people deserve a deeper, more transparent accountability from you as to why you said that over and over when your own statistic published in the Federal Register alerted your policy staff, and I presume you, to the fact that millions of Americans would, in fact, probably fall into the very gap you're trying to administratively fix now? That's one question. Second question. You were informed, or several people in this building were informed, 2 weeks before the launch of the website that it was failing the most basic tests internally. And yet a decision was made to launch the website on October 1st. Did you, sir, make that test? And if so, did you regret that?
Okay. On the website, I was not informed directly that the website would not be working as the way it was supposed to. Had I been informed, I wouldn't be going out saying, boy, this is going to be great. You know, I'm accused of a lot of things, but I don't think I'm stupid enough to go around saying this is going to be like shopping on Amazon or Travelocity a week before the website opens if I thought that it wasn't going to work. So clearly, we and I did not have enough awareness about the problems in the website. Even a week into it, the thinking was that these were some glitches that would be fixed with patches as opposed to some broader systemic problems that took much longer to fix, and we're still working on them. So, you know, that doesn't excuse the fact that they just don't work. But I think it's fair to say that, no, Garrett, Major, we would not have rolled out something knowing very well that it wasn't going to work the way it was supposed to, given all the scrutiny that we knew was going to be on the website. With respect to the pledge I made that if you like your plan, you can keep it, I think, you know, and I've said in interviews that there is no doubt that the way I put that forward unequivocally ended up not being accurate. It was not because of my intention not to deliver on that commitment and that promise. We put a grandfather clause into the law, but it was insufficient.
Some stations will drop away from us at this point. Others will remain with us as we continue this special coverage of President Obama on NPR News. And you're listening to live special coverage of a news conference by President Obama here on NPR News.
I'm looking at folks who've got Medicare and Medicaid, and that accounts for the vast majority of Americans. And then for people who don't have any health insurance at all, obviously that didn't apply. My commitment to them was you're going to be able to get affordable health care for the first time. You have an individual market that accounts for about 5% of the population, and our working assumption was, my working assumption was, that the majority of those folks would find better policies at lower costs or the same costs in the marketplaces, and that there, the universe of folks who potentially would not find a better deal in the marketplaces, the grandfather clause would work sufficiently for them. And it didn't. And again, that's on us, which is why we're that's on me. And that's why I'm trying to fix it. And as I said earlier, I guess last week, and I will repeat, that's something I deeply regret because it's scary getting a cancellation notice. Now, it is important to understand that out of that population, typically, there is constant churn in that market. Yeah, this market is not very stable and reliable for people. So people have a lot of complaints when they're in that marketplace. As long as you're healthy, things seem to be going pretty good. And so a lot of people think, I've got pretty good insurance, until they get sick, and then suddenly they look at the fine print and they've got a $50,000 out-of-pocket expense that they can't pay. We know that on average, over the last decade, each year, premiums in that individual market would go up an average of 15% a year. I know that because when we were talking about health care reform, one of the complaints was, I bought health care in the individual market, and I just got a notice from the insurer, they dropped me after I had an illness, or my premiums skyrocketed by 20 or 30%. Why aren't we doing something about this? So part of what our goal has been is to make sure that that individual market is stable and fair and has the kind of consumer protections that make sure that people don't get a rude surprise when they really need health insurance. But if you just got a cancellation notice, and so far you're thinking my prices are pretty good, you haven't been sick, and it fits your budget, and now you get this notice, you're going to be worried about it. And if the insurer is saying the reason you're getting this notice is because of the Affordable Care Act, then you're going to be understandably aggravated about it. Now, for a big portion of those people, the truth is they might have gotten a notice saying, we're jacking up your rates by 30%. They might have said, from here on out, we're not going to cover X, Y, and Z illnesses. We're changing the policy, because these were all 12-month policies. The insurance companies were under no obligation to renew the exact same policies that you had before. But, look, one of the things I understood when we decided to reform the health insurance market, part of the reason why it hasn't been done before and it's very difficult to do, is that anything that's going on that's tough in the healthcare market, if you've initiated a reform, can be attributed to your law. And so what we want to do is to be able to say to these folks, you know what, the Affordable Care Act is not going to be the reason why insurers have to cancel your plan. Now, what folks may find is the insurance companies may still come back and say, we want to charge you 20% more than we did last year, or we're not going to cover prescription drugs now. But that's in the nature of the market that existed earlier.
Did you decide, sir, that the simple declaration was something the American people could handle, but this nuanced answer you just gave now was something they couldn't handle, and you didn't trust the American people with a fuller truth?
No. I think, as I said earlier, Major, my expectation was that for 98% of the American people, either it genuinely wouldn't change at all, or they'd be pleasantly surprised with the options in the marketplace, and that the grandfather clause would cover the rest. That proved not to be the case. And that's on me. And the American people, those who got cancellation notices, do deserve and have received an apology from me. But they don't want just words. What they want is whether we can make sure that they are in a better place and that we meet that commitment. And by the way, I think it's very important for me to note that there are a whole bunch of folks up in Congress and others who made this statement, and they were entirely sincere about it. And the fact that you've got this this percentage of people who've had this impact, I want them to know that their senator or congressman, they were making representations based on what I told them and what this White House and our administrative staff told them. And so it's not on them, it's on us. But it is something that we intend to fix. Good. Steve Carlson.
Do you have reason to believe that Iran would walk away from nuclear talks if Congress draws up new sanctions? And would that, would a diplomatic breakdown at this stage leave you no option but military action? And how do you respond to your critics on the Hill who say that it was only tough sanctions that got Iran to the table? Only tougher sanctions will make it capitulate.
Well, let me make a couple of points. Number one, I've said before and I will repeat, we do not want Iran having nuclear weapons. And it would be not only dangerous to us and our allies, but it would be destabilizing to the entire region and could trigger a nuclear arms race that would make life much more dangerous for all of us. So our policy is Iran cannot have nuclear weapons. And I'm leaving all options on the table to make sure that we meet that goal. Point number two. The reason we've got such vigorous sanctions is because I and my administration put in place, when I came into office, the international structure to have the most effective sanctions ever. And so I think it's fair to say that I know a little bit about sanctions since we set them up and made sure that we mobilized the entire international community so that there weren't a lot of loopholes and they really had bite. And the intention in setting up those sanctions always was to bring the Iranians to the table so that we could resolve this issue peacefully, because that is my preference. That's my preference because any armed conflict has cost to it, but it's also my preference because the best way to assure that a country does not have nuclear weapons is that they are making a decision not to have nuclear weapons, and we're in a position to verify that they don't have nuclear weapons. So as a consequence of the sanctions that we put in place, and I appreciate all the help, bipartisan help that we received from Congress in making that happen, Iran's economy has been crippled. They had a negative 5% growth rate last year. Their currency plummeted. They're having significant problems in just the day-to-day economy on the ground in Iran. And President Rouhani made a decision that he was prepared to come and have a conversation with the international community about what they could do to solve this problem with us. We've now had a series of conversations, and it has never been realistic that we would resolve the entire problem all at once. What we have done is seen the possibility of an agreement in which Iran would halt advances on its program, that it would dilute some of the highly enriched uranium that makes it easier for them to potentially produce a weapon, that they are subjecting themselves to much more vigorous inspections so that we know exactly what they're doing at all their various facilities, and that that would then provide time and space for us to test over a certain period of months whether or not they are prepared to actually resolve this issue to the satisfaction of the international community. making us confident that, in fact, they're not pursuing a nuclear weapons program. In return, the basic structure of what's been talked about, although not completed, is that we would provide very modest relief at the margins of the sanctions that we've set up. But importantly, we would leave in place the core sanctions that are most effective and have most impact on the Iranian economy, specifically oil sanctions and sanctions with respect to banks and financing. And what that gives us is the opportunity to test how serious are they, but it also gives us an assurance that if it turns out 6 months from now that they're not serious, we can dial those sanctions right back up. So my message to Congress has been that let's see if this short-term phase one deal can be completed to our satisfaction, where we're absolutely certain that while we're talking with the Iranians, they're not busy advancing their program. We can buy some additional months in terms of their breakout capacity. Let's test how willing they are to actually resolve this diplomatically and peacefully. We will have lost nothing if, at the end of the day, it turns out that they are not prepared to provide the international community the hard proof and assurances necessary for us to know that they're not pursuing a nuclear weapon. And if that turns out to be the case, then not only is our entire sanctions infrastructure still in place, not only are they still losing money from the fact that they can't sell their oil and get revenue from their oil as easily, even throughout these talks, but other options remain. But what I've said to the members of Congress is that if, in fact, we're serious about trying to resolve this diplomatically, because no matter how good our military is, military options are always messy, are always difficult, always have unintended consequences, and in this situation are never complete in terms of making us certain that they don't then go out and pursue even more vigorously nuclear weapons in the future. If we're serious about pursuing diplomacy, then there's no need for us to add new sanctions on top of the sanctions that are already very effective and that brought them to the table in the first place. Now, if it turns out they can't deliver, they can't come to the table in a serious way and get this issue resolved, the sanctions can be ramped back up, and we've got that option.
You've been listening to the live special coverage of President Obama taking questions today at the White House. That last question addressing the negotiations over Iran's nuclear program, the president defending the idea of giving, quote, very modest relief in sanctions against Iran if Iran is able to make what he described as a short-term first stage deal, and promising that those sanctions could be dialed back up again. Of course, the main subject of the president's discussion with the press and with the nation today was the Affordable Care Act, the law also known as Obamacare, and a promise the president made that if you like your plan, you can keep it, a promise that was broken. The president now says, "I completely get how upsetting this is." Those are his words from a little bit earlier, and he said that these are the changes he intends to make. The administration is now saying that insurance companies can extend people's existing plans in the individual insurance market for another year if people want to keep them. At the same time, insurance companies will be required to tell their customers what protections they won't get under these plans that the administration says are substandard, and also what opportunities customers might have if they actually go into the health insurance exchanges, the marketplaces, online and elsewhere, that the administration has set up. He finally said that I will not accept what he called any brazen attempts to undermine the law, an apparent reference to a bill to change the Affordable Care Act, which is likely to be voted on as soon as tomorrow in the House of Representatives. Now, our correspondents have been listening to the president today, among them NPR's Scott Horsley, White House correspondent, who's been covering this story throughout. And Scott, what, if anything, did you hear in the president's statement that stuck out for you?
Well, so the sort of amended message from the president, the amended promise, is if you like your health insurance plan in the individual market, you can keep it for one more year. And if you can't, it's because the insurance company wouldn't let you, not because of the Affordable Care Act.
Oh.
So that's sort of his new message. And he also said, you know, I'm not going to walk away from Obamacare. And he stressed some of the problems with the existing healthcare system, the 40 million people who had no insurance coverage, even those who were in the individual market. There was a lot of churn. A lot of them lost their coverage when they got sick. This was sort of an implicit rebuttal to what John Boehner said. John Boehner, the House Speaker, spoke just before the president and said, as he has before, that Obamacare is going to destroy what he called the best healthcare delivery system in the world. The president was reminding us that there were some built-in problems with that healthcare delivery system prior to the Affordable Care Act, and he's not going, he said, to walk away from the reforms he's made. His challenge now is to keep Democrats in Congress from walking away from him and siding with Republicans in chipping away at that law.
Okay, two things at least to follow up on there. And one is the fact that the president was also asked to explain how he made this incorrect, to say the least, promise in the first place. I'm going to ask you about that in a moment, Scott Horsley. But first, you mentioned the fact that the president is now saying that you can keep your plan if your insurance company lets you keep your plan. NPR health policy correspondent Julie Robner has been covering that aspect of the story. Julie, is it likely at this point in November 2013 that insurance companies can let people keep their plans if they want to keep their plans next year?
Well, it's certainly going to be a challenge. I mean, for these plans that are supposed to end December 31st, there's a lot of hoops for the insurance companies to jump through. They're going to have to reconfigure plans. They're going to have to go to state insurance regulators, get old plans basically reapproved. They're going to be, there was a question about rate hikes. I actually asked some of the White House officials whether they'd be allowed to raise rates. It's not clear. In some states, they can't. In some states, they might be able to, because typically rates get raised every year, even on existing plans.
And so, the president made reference to that in his press conference here. He was saying, well, your insurance company can offer you to extend that plan. You might be paying 20% more. We don't know.
That's
he made
right.
Some
and
reference
that,
to that.
And that would be a fairly typical rate increase on an individual plan. I mean, the president said the individual market has never been a very forgiving place. That's why these plans do change every year. So, but basically, as Scott said, this is an effort to take the onus off of the administration, off of the Affordable Care Act, put it back on the insurance companies.
And in all fairness, I suppose we should say that the insurance companies had previously put the onus on the administration with these letters saying that your plan is being canceled because of the Affordable Care Act.
That's right. And sometimes fairly and sometimes not. So.
Now, Scott Horsley, let me ask about the question that was put to the president by Major Garrett of CBS News, who essentially said, why did you make this promise when it should have been clear to you that it could not be kept for everyone, most people, but not everyone? He said, well, the assumption was the grandfather clause we had for some policies would cover it. Did he clarify everything to you in his answer there, the president?
Well, I think those of us who kind of delved into this system always knew that it was not going to be the case that everyone who had an insurance plan would be able to keep it. No president could deliver on that promise. Obviously, people who get insurance through their employer, employers have always had the right to terminate that insurance. In fact, they'll have fewer rights to terminate that insurance now under the Affordable Care Act. And there was always a lot of churn in the individual insurance market. Now, whether it's given those uncertainties, whether the president was unwise to make such a bold promise that anybody who knew the system knew couldn't be kept, you know, political folks can argue about that. What he said was, we thought that the reforms we were making and the grandfathering in of the old clause, old policies, would be enough to cover, he said, 98% of the public,
yeah.
And that was close enough for government work.
Although that's also admitting that he knew that there was some percentage of people out there who were not going to be covered by this.
Yeah, and I obviously the whole problem of people having their insurance policies canceled is exacerbated by their inability to find substitutes on the healthcare exchanges.
And let's give a listen very quickly to something that the president did say in acknowledging the anger that he stirred up by making this promise and then proving to have broken it.
Now, we're going to do everything we can to help the Americans who've received these cancellation notices. But I also want everybody to remember there are still 40 million Americans who don't have health insurance at all. I'm not going to walk away from 40 million people who have the chance to get health insurance for the first time, and I'm not going to walk away from something that has helped the cost of health care grow at its slowest rate in 50 years.
President Obama at a press conference this afternoon promising changes to the administration of the Affordable Care Act that will allow many Americans to keep health insurance plans if they want them and if insurance companies will make it happen. This is special coverage from NPR News.